Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Jester. With me, as always, Akiva Lineker. Akiva, how are you today?
I'm very excited to be here.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to be here as well.
Yeah, there's like a loving.
Yeah, so before we get started, we have a couple of housekeeping issues.
Right. Yeah, sure. Okay, let's get to some stuff. First of all, I think, I don't know if you're up for this, but I'll sort of make you up for this. I can't go, obviously, but Rob's big like live show is next week. So, and you live right there. So if anybody wants
it's
to meet
in my house?
Yes.
Or it's downstairs in, your lobby.
Your house is big enough that it's
very convenient. Awesome.
If anybody wants to meet Chester, how about this? If three people tweet @Chester99.
Wait, three people I don't already know.
Yeah, three people you don't know. Tweet at you and say, I'd like to meet Chester at the after party. You'll show up to the after party. Obviously, it would be absurd for you to go to the thing other than the fact that it's sold out because you don't watch Survivor. But you would roll your lazy self downtown for that, right?
Sure.
Probably three people won't say yes. But if they yeah. really want to meet you, and then what are you wearing? How are they going to know it's you?
I'll wear an Adrian Peterson jersey, though.
Okay.
No, I'm joking.
You have like a Vikings hat.
What day is this?
Wednesday night.
Oh, I have a dinner next Wednesday night.
Yeah, but what time's your dinner over?
I don't know, like 9 o'clock.
Yeah, okay. So this won't even be, they won't even be there probably till 10 something.
All right. So then I'll likely be showing up in a suit.
That's fine. Oh, so you'll be the one guy wearing a suit. That's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other thing is, I guess, schedule for the next few weeks. Next week, we're going to do we each have a list, our 100 favorite television shows of all time. Yes, we're going to spend time doing that. If you want to send in your own list, just so we could, you know, have stuff to compare it to. If people send in, you could send in the top 10, but if you send in top 100, you'll get a first priority. You send those in, you know, DM one of us and I'll give you an email address. Fine. And then we have the NFL draft podcast coming up in 2 weeks. I have a plan for that already. And hopefully we'll be able to talk a little bit more football. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to have a home run pool draft at the end where we're going to each pick 10 players and whoever's team hits the most home runs wins. Now, what is the status of our bet right now? Who owes who money?
So I am up 10 because we were tied as of last week. And then we drafted the remaining 16 teams in the tournament before the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
And you had three of the four teams headed into the Final Four. The only one I had was Villanova. Big winner there for me.
Yeah. That would have been a devastating loss for me had I remembered.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because I opened up the chart and it showed where I keep track of all our bets. And it showed the eight teams for each of us. And I just deleted all that information and just wrote winner Akiva, because obviously you won, because I knew that I did really bad in that draft. And then I'm like, wait a second, did Akiva have Villanova? And then I had to, because I just deleted the information, I had to go listen to the podcast again.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah. And so I actually thought that you would win, but I actually won. And then the other ongoing bet we have, you know, our MLB over-unders, of course, which is, I'm not going to update that just yet. We're all under on every team so far. The other bet that we have is the NBA second half wins, and we each drafted 15 teams for that. And I've been winning the whole time, but in the last 2 days, you're just down one game right now. So you would just have one fewer win than I do down the stretch. It's really going to come down to those two Warriors-Spurs games, and we'll see whether the Spurs even decide to play anybody. You know, what's your guess? Do you think they do? Do you think they try and protect the undefeated at home court, 41-0?
The Spurs, no. I do. Even if they try and play for pride against Golden State, their other game left is against OKC, and I don't think they're going to play everyone. Diao was the best player on the floor in the first Golden State game, and he's already out for the rest of the regular season. So I don't think they're going to win, even if they try. You know, they're not going to win both games against Golden State and OKC, even if they're playing 100%.
I also don't think they're going to. They're 39-0 at home, so you can't.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to them.
If they tried, though, they would be the favorite in both games.
They'll be the favorite, but I'd say it's hard to win both of those games.
The thing is, strategically, I don't think they have any incentive to try.
Opponents at this point, I mean, OKC has literally no incentive. They're locked into the three. Because they're probably going to be playing each other in their second round.
Yeah, but I'm saying in terms of mind games, the Spurs already sort of have that over the Warriors in the way that they won the last game. So they have nothing additional to gain. If they try to beat the Warriors again at home, it's like, okay, we can beat you at home. We
already established
it from the last one.
Right.
They can only sort of lose some of that mystique to the extent any of this stuff matters.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't try if I was them. I would rest everyone. And I think they will probably do that.
So let me tell you about my night last night, Akiva. I got home from work, like 8 or 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, not a late night, but not an early night. By the time I got home, everyone in my house was already sleeping. And I knew that I was going to go to work a little bit later today than I had the previous couple days. So I decided to sit back, pop open a bottle of Chardonnay. It wasn't actually Chardonnay. It was a slightly higher content. But, you know, and I took a few sips and I was watching some basketball on the television. And I just started to come up with some ideas. So I was jotting down some notes and I thought we could run through some of my notes. And you, this is really going to be a hot take episode. We're going to have to put in a lot of those hot take drops because I'm going to drop a few hot takes. Hopefully you have a few spicy ones to throw back at me. So do you want to go through some of my notes and you can tell me what you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So let's start right off the top. What I was thinking about last night as I was watching the hoops on the TV was the week of the NCAA tournament, or like the week after, like the week that starts with, you know, Monday Night Championship, is such a great underrated sports week. Obviously, you know, you start with Monday, you have the championship, and then you're transitioning. That week is also almost always, you know, it's opening day of baseball the same day. So you have the first week of baseball, but you also have the last 2 weeks of the NBA regular season.
Does that do anything for you? Because it doesn't do anything for me.
This is what I'm getting to. So when you watch a college basketball game on Monday night and then you watch an NBA game on Tuesday night, the obvious thing is the NBA has such a dramatically, like, I mean, insanely higher level quality of play.
Yeah. This is a scorching take, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I know. But then the difference, of course, especially in the last 2 weeks of the season when a lot of teams are locked in, some teams are tanking, etc., is there's much lower drama, right?
Yes.
But a lot of the drama, like that we saw in March Madness, is really a result of that mediocre play. The only reason we see all those comebacks is because teams are so bad that they can blow leads, sure, miss easy shots, easy turnovers,
totally,
can score, etc. If teams are better, then they would, you know, hold those leads, and then we wouldn't have a lot of that drama.
I was also thinking Northern Iowa, if they don't blow that game, they could have won the championship.
Well, who knows? Anything's possible.
They beat North Carolina this season, Northern Iowa.
Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
well,
they're really,
you know,
good.
It's funny, because people are talking about, oh, is Villanova one of the greatest champions ever because they shot 58% for the tournament? Does everybody forget the fact that every team had 7-plus losses heading into the tournament, that we were saying that there was no good team this year? Like, it's like, Villanova played really well, but part of the reason they played really well is because there is no great team.
Right.
People are forgetting that.
No, they're not even a good team.
So let's really bring in, like, spice up this take for a second, make it nice and hot. So there's been a couple of conversations the last couple of weeks related to women's basketball. One was the hot take started by Dan Shaughnessy and other idiots saying that the UConn women's dominance is bad for the game. And then sort of slightly related to that was this conversation about should women's basketball lower the rims from 10 feet to 9 feet. So a lot of hot takes being thrown around on both of those topics. But to me, the problem with women's college basketball, and this ties into both of those issues, is sort of what I was just saying, comparing men's college basketball to the NBA. So the quality of play, the athleticism in the NBA is so much higher than in college. But as we said, the redeeming factor for college is the drama. So you're not watching March Madness to see the best basketball in the world, but you're seeing it to see the crazy drama. But the quality of athleticism is even lower in the women's game. But the drama is also lowest of all, because there's no question UConn's going to win every game by 40 points. So you're not watching. So if you want to watch the highest quality basketball, you're not going to watch women's college basketball. And if you want to watch dramatic basketball, you're certainly not going to watch. So why are you going to watch? So I think that's the issue. So it's not that we're mad at UConn for being dominant. It's just like, what if you love basketball, whether the highest quality play or drama, what reason do you have to watch women's college basketball in its current iteration?
There is drama. There just was no drama this season. First of all, you know, UConn losing would have been cooler than anything happened in the men's tournament.
Yeah, but they won every game by 40 points.
Okay, but there are years where they've been upset and lost. Second of all, it really wasn't a UConn thing. It was a Breonna Stewart thing. Like, she's gone. They're not even going to be like a top 10 team necessarily next year.
You can say that she's a historically great talent and you want to watch it for that reason. You know, didn't she win, not just that she won 4 straight titles, but she won Player of the Year all 4 years.
Final Four MVP all 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, which is really unprecedented. I mean, not really. It literally is unprecedented. But again,
wait, can I tell you my dream, though? I may have mentioned this on some podcast of mine, but this really, now I get older, it's less realistic, obviously. But when I was in high school, I so desperately wanted to know how I would do in the girls' high school basketball league. You know, when I was a high school guy, like, I always said I could dominate. I would be the best player in the history of the league.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously that game would never happen, but I would have paid, like, all my money just to play one game and see what would happen. Because, like, my wife was the captain of her high school basketball team. She's 5'3". I'm much better. When we play one-on-one, after, like, 5 minutes, I'm totally out of steam. But don't read that the wrong way. And then I
5 minutes of exciting action.
After 2 minutes, I'm totally I'm totally shot. But, like,
Kevin, not every guy can last 5 minutes. Don't say yourself short.
She'll win like 11-8. But
wait, are you really losing to your wife in basketball?
I have lost one on one, sir. I mean, she was good. She was, but the point is, like, I'm 1,000 times better than her. I can block every single one of her shots.
Not if you're losing.
Well, I just run out of gas eventually. But
God, that's pathetic.
But but I've beaten her a lot also. But she's good. She was the captain of her team. Like, there's newspaper clippings from, like, the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel or whatever. Like, you know, Seligman grabs, like, has 18 points and grabs 21 rebounds. Like, she was a beast. But the point is, she's 5'3". She shouldn't be able to grab 21 rebounds. Yeah. So I think I would have dominated, but I guess at this point I'm never going to get the chance to know. But really, that would have been one of the peaks of my life, to find out one game. I should have just organized it. I should have just, like, paid a team, you know, and, like, yeah, taken one spot.
So I used to have a similar hot take back in my youth about 10 years ago, which was...
Warning. Hot take approaching.
When I was, like, you know, 10 years ago, I insisted that I could have played in the WNBA at that point.
That's
now,
idiotic.
to be clear, what I was saying is...
How
I would
tall
be
are you?
Like 6'1".
Okay.
I said I would be the last man on the bench. I would be by far the least
athletic
person.
Be the only man on the bench. Yeah.
I'd be the least athletic person in the entire league. But this was a time, and the WNBA has gotten a lot better in the last 10, 15 years, yeah, and I've gotten worse. This was a time when forwards were 5'11", 160 pounds. I would be bigger than almost every single player in the league.
So now they've gotten bigger
10 minutes
also.
A game. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I could come in for 10 minutes a game and get rebounds, is what I thought. And so part of my reason for this was in college. I used to play. Now, granted, I went to Penn, which is not exactly a basketball powerhouse. But our women's team did go to the tournament a couple of years as like a 16 seed when I was there. And I played with some of those girls' pickup sometimes. And the best girl in our entire school was the worst person on the floor playing pickup. Not because she wasn't a much better basketball player than I was, but because she was 5'8", 125 pounds.
Oh, so you were better than the best player at Penn?
Oh, no. She was a much better basketball player than me. But when we played like 5-on-5 pickup games, I think I was more valuable than her because... And back then, when
I have
I was
a feeling watching. she would dispute this point. We get her on the podcast.
But we played with her, and like she was just too small. The only thing she could do was hit a wide open jumper from 20 feet, which she would hit more often than me. But she couldn't go anywhere near the lane because she was so much smaller than everybody on the court.
She's also not even sniffing the WNBA. The WNBA at this point is like,
oh, for sure,
very
so,
high level.
No, I couldn't have actually made the WNBA. That's always a hot take. But so at the University of Maryland, which had a great women's basketball team back when I was in college, mm-hmm, the group of people who played, you know, there's practice squads that run against the teams for,
sure,
you know, and the practice squad that played against the women's team was a whole bunch of like Orthodox Jews at Maryland for whatever reason, a bunch of Hillel folks. And so I was friends with a bunch of them. And when I mentioned this take to them, they would go crazy and tell me I was an idiot because Maryland, which was a great college basketball team, you know, they were better than me at basketball, and they played against the women's team all the time in practice. And they said, you know, and most of those players obviously weren't even going into the WNBA. So I acknowledge the hotness of my take.
But you're saying you could have been a good D1 women's college basketball player at outside of a top 10 school.
Just because of my size alone, right? If you were 15 years ago, if you were 6'1" and 190 pounds, you were going to be one of the biggest one or two players on any team in the country.
Mm-hmm. Are you 190?
So, now I'm probably closer to 200, but you know.
Okay.
So anyways, so that's my hot take there. Mm-hmm. I think our female listenership is going to be enraged at that.
Yep. Which one?
That's good. We might lose both.
We did
them,
ask.
Really
we did ask for women to like tweet in with a hashtag, and only two did. But I know there's more women out there. I've heard from
more than
women.
Two.
Yeah. They're just hiding in shame.
Yeah. So let's look at some of my other notes from watching basketball last night. So I was watching the Houston game, and they mentioned that Dwight Howard is having his career high season in shooting percentage. Now, part of that is the fact that he's shooting the ball less than ever because he doesn't get the ball because James Harden is a crazy ball hog. And James Harden's gotten a lot of hate this year. And it's kind of, you know, and his defense obviously is like comically bad, and people love to, you know, show GIFs showing how bad he is at defense. But he still sort of gets more credit, I think, than he deserves. Like, I don't think he's criticized enough. Like, last year, he finished second in the NBA in the MVP vote. And then the players in their MVP vote, they actually gave it to him over Steph Curry.
Right.
And now part of the problem is it's really hard to sort of, when the cumulative stats we have in the NBA, like win shares, doesn't really take defense into account enough, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, his win shares are pretty good. But if we had war the way that baseball has it, I think that James Harden's war would be really, really bad. I think he'd be equivalent to like a power hitting corner outfielder who hits 30 homers, but is so bad at defense that he's almost like a replacement level player.
Sure, because he turns the other team's shooting guard, even if it's like Danny Green, into James Harden.
Yeah, so I found the perfect comparison for James Harden. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
Dante Bichette. In 1995, Dante Bichette finished second in the MVP voting in the National League. Can I give you his numbers that year? He had a ridiculous season.
334.
What's that?
That was my guess for his batting average.
340.
Okay. 43 home runs.
40 home runs led the league.
128 RBIs. Ooh, I was so close. Yeah.
Led the league in home runs, RBIs, 197 hits led the league. Total bases led the league. Slugging percentage, 620 led the league. His OPS, 984.
Fourth in the league in steroid injections. No?
Well, he was, yeah, he's also playing Colorado during sort
Did
of
he get busted for steroids or no?
I don't think so.
My apologies to the Bichette family.
So Dante Bichette, just an incredible season, leads the league in all these numbers, finished second in the MVP voting, right? Sort of James Harden-esque.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what his WAR was in 1995?
You know his first name was Alphonse? Yeah, keep going.
That's true. Alphonse Dante Bichette. He went by the middle name. His WAR that year, 1.1. He was worth one win above replacement in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not only was he not an MVP candidate, he wasn't even an All-Star. Now, part of that was the fact that he's playing in Colorado, so his row numbers weren't as good as his home numbers. But part of that also is his defense was so bad, right?
Yeah.
And he's playing left field and a little bit of right field. He's playing corner outfield. He's doing atrocious defensively. He's giving up as many runs as he's scoring. But the MVP voters still voted him second because the numbers that they're familiar with, he put up monster numbers. So that's basically what James Harden is. James Harden is Dante Bichette. And the sad thing is he has Dwight Howard on his team, you know, one of the top 50 players of all time. And Howard's shooting at a career high level, but he never gets the ball.
Very sad.
Yeah. So that's that hot take. You have any comments on that one?
Hopefully these are even... I mean, no, I have no comments. Let's keep going.
All right. Okay. I got another NBA hot take for you. This is a comparison that I made last night. Dirk Nowitzki against Peyton Manning.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying this because they're both lanky white guys, you know, who are slightly awkward and played at a star level deep into their 30s,
mm-hmm.
although that's all true. It's really about, let's compare the perceptions of both of them. Peyton Manning is generally seen as a not clutch player, fair or unfair. That's how he's seen. I think it's unfair, of course. And Dirk Nowitzki is seen generally the opposite way. And that leads us, I think that leads one, Dirk, to be overrated, and one, Peyton, to be underrated. Even though their career arcs are nearly identical, both of them, from basically their second year in the league, they were all-stars. They became superstars. They had teams with very good records year after year after year. Peyton was the best quarterback in the league. Dirk was never that good, but he was one of the top 5-10 players in the league for sure. But Dirk's postseason career was like worse than Peyton's, right? You know, he lost obviously in the finals when they were up 2-0 on the Heat. He lost in the first round after having won 67 games in the regular season to the Warriors. He had the one season when they beat the Heat and LeBron, but other than that, he was always a disappointment in the playoffs. But because of that one season, he's seen as like such a clutch player.
I'll tell you why. Because ultimately he was viewed as like an A-minus type guy in the sense where like every year LeBron doesn't win, that's a failure for him. But Dirk doesn't have that pressure. He's more of a Ewing, and Ewing only has it because he never ended up winning. If Ewing had won once, he would be viewed at like 100 times more as a hero. So Dirk was in the Ewing category where all he had to do was win once. And people forget that he was, you know, kind of irrelevant in a lot of playoff series.
No, I agree with you about
but
that.
But he also didn't have, you know, they didn't have great teams for many years.
Who, Dallas?
Yeah.
You're completely wrong. The year they won the title, they didn't have such a great team. But throughout it, but they had three all-stars every year. He had Steve Nash,
yeah, that's
who
true.
Was an all-star every single year. They had Michael Finley, who was an all-star every year. Then they added pieces at other times they had answers.
Yeah, but Dirk also got better after Nash left. Like, Dirk hit his prime when Nash was gone.
Now, also, let me be clear. I'm not a Dirk hater. As an example, so you know, as I think people know, I've re-ranked every season in NBA history who should have been the All Stars, who should have been the All NBA teams, and who should have been the MVP.
ATV baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep going.
I'm more what's ATV?
That's Alex the Virgin. Oh. That's your nickname there.
I am more favorable to Dirk than the actual voters. As an example, Dirk won one MVP and finished third twice. So only three times did he finish in the top five in MVPs. I have him with eight times finishing in the top five. I think he should have won twice, and I think he should have been second once and should have been third once, and he should have been fourth another four times. So I'm much more favorable to Dirk than the voters are. I think Dirk is the 21st best player of all time, which puts him in the category, like you just said. I have Patrick Ewing just a little bit below him.
I really have to approve these topics next time before you do them.
but this is my issue with Dirk Nowitzki. So I have him 21 all-time, and I have a comparable to guys like Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing. But now, like ESPN, when they came out with their all-time rankings a couple of months ago, they had Dirk up at 17. So now Dirk is being put too high unfairly, whereas the same folks are putting Peyton Manning too low. And it's crazy because Dirk won one title, all of a sudden he's the 17th best player of all time. Like, Dirk doesn't play defense at all.
Right.
I mean, he's not James Harden. He tries. But so it's crazy to me that he's being compared to, you know, some of the greatest players of all time, because I agree with you. He's an A-minus player. He's not an A player. He's not a top 20 player of all time. He's just outside that. But he's playing for so long that he's going to finish, you know, top five in scoring. All right. You have no comments there?
What else you got for me? Give me something good. I know all anybody wants is Houston Rockets talk. That's all anyone... They're not even going to be in the playoffs, so we can't talk...
Is that true? Okay, what? Fine. So another Houston Rockets talk. Yao Ming made the Hall of Fame this week.
All right. Well, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
You think he should be?
Yeah, for his contribution.
Okay. So because of his role in China, et cetera, fine.
Of course.
But
yeah,
as a player?
No, his career wasn't long
good.
Enough. And he probably wasn't even good enough when he played.
Good. Agreed. The problem, and I know I brought this up in previous podcasts, is like the Basketball Hall of Fame is not like in football. It's
not the NBA Hall
exactly,
of Fame also.
Exactly.
It's Basketball
that,
Hall of Fame.
I agree with you 100%. The Pro Football Hall of Fame is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's just for what you do in the NFL. Also, you don't have the problem of net international because, you know, it's a one country game. Baseball, it's actually called the National Baseball Hall of Fame. No international because, you know, that's not a concern. Here, the Basketball Hall of Fame is just called the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. So you got women in there, you got international players in there, you got people who never played in the NBA, you got people who played just a couple seasons in the NBA. And so that's the problem. Like Yao Ming as a player was basically slightly worse than Brad Daugherty. You remember Brad Daugherty, right?
Yeah, he's a NASCAR announcer for ESPN.
Yeah, not very many 7-foot-tall black guys commentating at NASCAR events.
Well, I think now he actually moved to the NBA. They were kind of racist, and they said you have to go to the NBA.
Yao and Brad Daugherty's numbers, very similar. Yao actually played one fewer year and about 80 fewer games, but they both averaged 19 points, about 9.5 rebounds. They both have identical number of win shares for their career. You know, Yao had about 3 all-star caliber seasons. He made more than that because all the Chinese voters were voting for him. And not just him, but whoever else was on the Rockets. Steve Francis and later T-Mac got all these undeserved all-star nods because of all the Houston the Chinese voters voting for Houston. But I have Yao and Daugherty at 38 and 39 all-time on my all-time center rankings. And the top 25 is really the Hall of Fame cutoff. So
after I said let's not talk about the Rockets and Yao and stuff,
I doubled down.
You're going to. All right, what else do you have for me? Give me something that's not NBA.
All right, fine. So we're going to skip NBA?
Yeah, let's skip it.
All right, did you watch the finale of the O.J. Simpson?
No, but you could give me the take. There's no spoilers, Chester. We all know what happened. You could tell me whatever you want to say.
It was a plot twist. Well, no, I wanted to hear your take on it. But, you know, I thought it was very good. I'm really excited for this ESPN documentary series, which is coming in April.
Is it your number? Is the People vs. O.J. Simpson your number one show of 2016 so far?
Game of Thrones is starting in just a couple weeks on the second day of Passover.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we can't even watch it? First of all.
No, it's Sunday night.
Oh, we can't watch it. Okay. Isn't that the third day of Passover then, technically?
It's the third night, correct.
Yeah. Okay.
It's after sunset. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's very important. I mean, I don't know. Do you have any more takes about the Villanova UNC game?
No, I got nothing.
Yeah. What about the end of your brackets?
Nope. Nobody cares.
Your great 4-1 tournament? You had one guy won your two of your four pools.
And it wasn't you, thank God. Yeah.
No, it was Gund. Who's Gund?
I don't know. I don't know if you should just be saying everyone's name. I don't know. Guy, he could be like a politician who's gonna like get his spot blown up. I don't know. Now you got to edit out his name.
Let's just have a couple more NBA takes. We've talked about a lot of good teams. Let's talk about some terrible teams. The Knicks. First of all, can you explain? You live in New York. You're a Mets fan. You're a Jets fan. Why are you not a Knicks fan? Why did you get to adopt the Spurs?
I think my father and I went to a game in like 1988 or 1989, and the Knicks were really bad. They weren't playing the Spurs.
The Knicks were good back then. They had Patrick Ewing. I became a Knicks fan actually in 1988 because the Timberwolves were so bad and they needed another team. The Knicks were bad before they got Ewing in 85. By the late 80s, they were, you know, a playoff team.
Whatever. They lost the game.
Okay.
I think 88, 89. I don't think they were so good in 88, 89.
They were winning 45 games a year.
They lost the game by a lot. And I just, my father was like joking about how, you know, I root for the only losers. Like the Jets are losers. The Mets are losers. And he was telling me about David Robinson. This guy who had been drafted but was still 2 years away from coming, or at that point, maybe a few months away from coming to the NBA. And I'm like, oh, that sounds exciting. And for whatever reason, I decided to root for the Spurs. I've never been to San Antonio, but, you know, when the Spurs would come to town, I would try and sit, you know, like as close as possible to the Spurs.
Why have you never desired to actually go to San Antonio for a game?
I have. I came very close a few times. In the 99 finals, I wanted to go. There were people from my neighborhood going to one of the Knicks at Spurs finals games, but I had to go to camp. I actually had it was Friday night and I couldn't watch it, but there was a guy with a VCR in camp. This is June of 99. And the finals ended really late because that was the lockout year, the 50 game season. And I was in the dining room on a Saturday at night, right before I was going to be able to watch the game. And there was, you know, you're in the middle of the country. There's no internet really yet. I mean, there's AOL like 2.0, but so like there's no way of getting spoiled. And some dummy runs into the room and's like, the Spurs beat the Knicks by 3. You know, the Spurs won the championship. And so like we were going to be able to watch. I think it was Rabbi Storch. I don't even know who he is. We were going to watch the.
Wait, I can't mention Gunn, but you could mention Rabbi Storch.
Well, because he didn't do anything bad. It's not gambling. Hey,
Gunn did something bad by winning multiple. Oh, I see what you're saying.
You can't, first of all, you keep saying the guy's name. I'm going to make you bleep it out every time. So stop. Anyway, so we were going to go back to his cabin and watch the game. I did watch it. And it was still very exciting to see Latrell Sprewell get blocked by Will Perdue, David Robinson, and Tim Duncan on the same shot. But I've been a Spurs fan. I'm not a front runner. I was a Spurs fan way before they started winning, starting from about 1990. My Twitter avi is me wearing a Spurs jersey with the Spurs shorts, probably tucked in about 92. It's been a good run. I got this really cool Notre Dame hat on in my Twitter avi.
Well, not being a Knicks fan was a great move, because you heard this week that Phil Jackson wants to bring Kurt Rambis back.
Oh yeah, I would lose it if I was a Knicks fan.
What the hell is going on? I mean,
I think he's trolling them. I think it's also great because Phil, the only team in the league that really hates and doesn't respect the Spurs, or the only like figure in the league, is Phil Jackson. He views them as like,
well, 99 was, yeah, them. An asterisk he puts on that title.
Yeah, so he's very competitive with them, and obviously the Spurs have no respect for Phil Jackson. I think he always just had the best players. Yeah. He never won the NBA Finals with a team that was anything other than the number one team.
It's incredible to me how, you know, I've lived in New York for most of my life since high school, mm-hmm. for a majority of the last 16, 17 years.
Okay.
And most of my friends are New Yorkers, but they're basically not Knicks fans? Yeah, NBA fandom has single-handedly been murdered in this town by Dolan and Isaiah and now Phil Jackson.
But it's impossible to explain how big they were when Amare came that first year.
But well,
Amare was such a big deal those first 50 games before they traded for Carmelo. I can't even explain it. But it was for like two months. Yeah, because that's all they've been. They've had two good months in the last 15 years. But they will, like, the fans will be there. And as you see, like, the Rangers fans are incredible in New York.
Yeah.
Like, the guys who like the Rangers are obsessed with the Rangers. Like,
who's your hockey team, by the way?
I grew up liking the Montreal Canadiens, but I have disavowed.
Oh my God, you're such a front runner. It's unbelievable.
Well, no, my grandfather was Canadian, and granted, he was from Toronto, but I didn't understand.
But people from Toronto hate the Canadiens more than anybody.
I know, but I didn't understand the difference when I was 5 years old. I just heard like Canadiens, and someone bought me like a Canadiens shirt and a Canadiens hockey stick.
I lived in Toronto for a year. The entire year, I met one Habs fan. That entire year.
Yeah, but I've disavowed them. I would say the Islanders, but I won't take credit when they win.
All right. Well, so you brought up a topic, which is, you know, how Amari got New York all fired up. So here's another one of my notes from last night. Mm-hmm. I think at some point we should have a draft or a comparison, like rank sports cities in America.
Yeah, but how do you do that?
Well, it's subjective, but we make arguments and then we argue with each other.
San Diego's last.
Yeah, Miami's pretty
South
low.
South Florida,
Atlanta's pretty
last.
Low. Yeah.
Atlanta's probably worse than Miami.
Yeah, but here's part of
is
why
this
I bring
pro
this up.
Sports cities that we're ranking.
Yeah, but
I mean, they wouldn't change the bottom three, but it might change some of the other ones.
Well, Miami would move up a little bit for college, I think. But
no, the Canes have like 20,000 fans. They don't even fill the stadium. Also, people forget like Miami's not like the biggest school. It's a private. People think like Miami's this like state school because it's just called University of Miami. But
yeah, but you also have. You know, you have the Gators up north. You have Florida State. Like, the state as a whole is very to college.
Okay, but the state is enormous. The state has 30 million people. You have to go by city. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, okay, so here's part of why I bring this up. Because, you know, last night I was
If this is the worst episode we've ever done, send us a hashtag worst episode.
Yeah, oh, I got more hot takes coming. But, so here's the thing. So the Bulls, I was watching the Bulls game last night. And I remember I went to camp in rural Wisconsin in the 90s, and I went to camp. Everybody was from Chicago, so Chicago was the home field advantage, and the Bulls were so much more popular at that camp than any team anywhere. And part of the problem, and or even forget about comparing New York versus Chicago, because the Bulls fans are clearly much more passionate, like much more dominant in Chicago than the fans of any team are in New York, the Yankees, the Giants, anybody, even Minnesota. In Minnesota, when the Vikings are good, and even the Twins and the Timberwolves, but for sure when the Vikings are good, they dominate the entire state. Every single person wears purple. You get off the, you know, you land at the airport, all the Delta employees are wearing Vikings jerseys. Every car on the road has a Vikings flag on it. And I just think New York City is too big a city for any one team to dominate. Now, also, you have the issue, of course, that there's multiple teams in every league, and plus you have a lot of transplants, so no one team has the dominant market share. But that's the thing. When you live in New York, and I've lived in New York, as I said, for most of the last 15 years, even when one of their teams in the championship, even last year with the Mets, you don't walk around the city feeling like this is a Mets town. You know, there are certainly pockets, but it's different than being in Minneapolis when the Vikings are good, where every single person you see is talking and acting and wearing Viking stuff every single day. And you never get that in New York because it's just too big of a city, I think.
Do you want to address the accusation that we only care about people who are from the coasts?
Who's accusing?
You didn't see that whole thing on Twitter? This guy said that we only care about people... Like that, I speak down to people who are not New Yorkers.
Well, I think he sort of put you in a lose-lose position because he was mad at you for not assuming that people outside the coast heard of somebody who was important to you. And it's sort of lose-lose because if you assume everybody's heard of him, then you can be called provincial and say, oh, everybody has to care about him because you care about him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sort of say, oh, do you also know about this? So it's sort of, you were in a lose-lose there. So I don't really think you were at fault.
No, I never at fault.
Oh, okay. But what do you think about my thing, which is sort of, it's not a criticism of New York. It's a compliment to New York. As a
yeah,
city.
Okay. Yes, I know. This is, oh my God. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of people in New York. There's multiple teams.
But it's just, so you've never really got to appreciate what
no,
I had
no, because I
kid,
never lived in Minnesota, thank God.
Yeah, but that's the same. But when you live in one of these cities, but you know, it can be Chicago also. It can be LA with the Lakers.
Yeah.
You never got to experience one team so dominating the city that it, like, the whole city gets this civic pride.
I'll say I can understand the concept. How about that?
Yeah, but until you've lived it, that's what I'm saying. So New York, which is a great sports town, and to be clear, Minnesota fans, other than the Vikings, like for the Twins and Timberwolves, they are such fair weather fans. When the teams are bad, they don't care. So I'm not saying Minnesota are the greatest fans, but when a team is good, it's just really exciting. Actually, now that we're talking about Minnesota, so did you see the end of the Warriors-Wolves game the other night?
No, but I got some tweets that you were crying. You were so happy.
No, not about that win. But I've been reading, you know, you derided a couple of weeks ago the fact that there's been a lot of media coverage, national media coverage about the Timberwolves this year and in a positive light. And so I
said, you said there's been a lot of media
Yeah, so
coverage.
I sent you like six articles.
And I said, no one cares.
Yeah. So I sent you a whole bunch of articles. And it is really exciting because the Timberwolves are on the cusp. They're basically where Oklahoma City was, you know, in like Kevin Durant's second season. They're about to explode. But the worst thing I read anywhere was one article, which here's the second to last sentence of the article. This is talking about the win over the Warriors. This win likely guarantees coach Sam Mitchell on a one-year trial as interim coach following the death of Flip Saunders in October will return next season. If that's true, the biggest loser of all from that game the other night is the Timberwolves, right?
Yeah, Sam Mitchell and Kurt Rambis are in the running for like historically bad NBA coach. The two worst coaches maybe ever.
No, there's so many bad NBA coaches. Sam Mitchell's bad, but he's
I think Haralabob would rank Rambis and Mitchell as like the two worst coaches he's ever seen.
Well, can we talk about bad front office? Sam Hinkie got the boot in Philadelphia.
Yeah, okay. We talked about it. What else we got?
Yeah. Well,
it's home run pool?
It's very exciting to be a Timberwolves fan because you got potentially new ownership. Glenn Taylor's looking to sell the team, a new front office, possibly a new coach, but the players are so exciting, and you know, I'm the one who has said ever since KG left, I said they might as well fold up the franchise. I said the Timberwolves will never be good.
Can you guys win 30 games once before you get excited about the Timberwolves? Like, they're going to have the same players next year, and they're just going to lose with them. Where's your draft pick going to be around if you if it falls where it should?
They'll be five.
That's pretty good, actually. It's a good draft.
Yeah. And they don't really need any other pieces.
Oh, you know, they're set. Yeah. What are they? 20 and 60? Yeah, they're totally set. They don't need anybody.
Yeah, but they have already, like, Karl Anthony Towns is already one of the top six or seven players in the league, and his rookie season
That's
is
the craziest thing I've ever heard.
In NBA
If he
history,
was one of... Okay, here's the deal. If you... In the NBA, I'm going to explain this to you because you've never seen a winning team in your life. In the NBA, if you are one of the six or seven best players, your team cannot be 26 and 52.
That's not true. It happens. It happened to
it happened. When did Michael Jordan go 26 and 52?
Michael Jordan wasn't the sixth best. He was the
best.
Akeem Olajuwon and Charles Barkley. Again, LeBron wasn't the sixth best player. He was the best player. And LeBron's rookie season is the answer.
How many 26? Okay? If you flip around 26 and 52, Tim Duncan's never done that badly in his career.
Okay, but Akeem Olajuwon and Charles Barkley.
Everyone's the best player, I know.
Akeem Olajuwon and Charles Barkley did it all the time in the 80s, okay? All the time. It happened to Kobe Bryant in this decade. It happened to Kevin Garnett in this decade. Kobe on the Lakers won 30 games, right?
There's no such thing as having a top six or six. Okay, let's.
Kobe Bryant, hold on.
Who's
Kobe
better,
Bryant did it in two.
Karl Anthony Towns or LeBron James this
LeBron
season?
LeBron James.
Who's better, Kevin Durant or Karl Anthony Towns?
Kevin Durant.
Who's better, Stephen Curry or Karl Anthony Towns?
Okay, that's three.
Okay, we have three.
Yeah.
Who is better, Russell Westbrook or Karl Anthony Towns?
Four, yep.
Kawhi Leonard.
Five.
Or first of all, I'm shocked. Shocked that you're even giving me Kawhi, but I appreciate
it. You're running out of guys. I got news
for you. Who is better, Chris Paul or Karl Anthony Towns?
Who's been better since the All-Star break? Karl Anthony Towns.
Okay, I asked you who's been better since the All-Star break. Who is better at basketball right now?
It's pretty close.
Chris Paul. Okay. No.
What has Chris Paul ever done in the playoffs?
It's Chris.
Has he made the second round one?
Oh, so it matters what you've done in the playoffs, unless you're Peyton Manning, in which case throw out the playoffs. Okay.
No, but
Who is better, Paul George or Karl Anthony Towns?
Karl Anthony Towns, and it's not even close.
Oh, my
not
God.
Even
you're
close.
Crazy.
It
you're
is nuts. Not even close.
Okay.
It is not even close.
You're
he
nuts.
Is a much better. He's probably as good defensively or very close, and he's a much better offensive player right now. He's a better shooter. He's a better player. You've openly said that you haven't been watching the Timberwolves this year. And you haven't been watching the last 2 months when they've basically been a 500 team.
Okay. Like, I'll give you more players for, and I know he's young, and obviously he could, I know you tweeted that he's younger than 9 of the 10 guys who were on the, who started the national championship game in college. So obviously he could get much better. I'll give you guys who are better than him this year. Damian Lillard. By the way, Anthony Davis, a million times better than Karl Anthony Towns.
Damian Lillard plays no defense? Absolutely not. Anthony Davis, when healthy, is slightly better than Karl Anthony Towns.
Oh my God.
Right now. But he's not healthy right now. He's not in the league right now. You can't count him. Here's the other thing. Compare Karl Anthony Towns to every other rookie. Compare him to what Shaq did as a rookie, to what Tim Duncan did as a rookie, to what Anthony Davis did as a rookie, to what LeBron did as a rookie, to what Kevin Durant did as a rookie. He was better than all of them as rookies. That's the point. He's already a rookie, and he's already better than those all-time great players were as rookies. That's the point.
I like that he hits free throws. It's interesting that he has been shooting a little bit of threes recently.
Look at three-point shooting in his rookie year for Kevin Durant.
Okay. No, listen, I'm not saying he's not good. He's just not one of the 6 or 7 best players right now.
And I'm not a homer, because I think Andrew Wiggins is insanely
overrated. Oh, you're not a
overrated.
Homer. You're not
I think Andrew Wiggins is insanely overrated.
I'm not a homer.
Overrated.
I think Andrew Wiggins is barely top 10 in the NBA.
No, I don't think Andrew Wiggins is an all... I don't think that he's scoring 20 points a game. I don't think that he remotely resembles an all-star player right now. He has a couple of incredible offensive moves. But defensively, he has significant lapses. His all-around game is not there yet. He's been a disappointment to me. Anyways, but nobody wants to talk about the Timberwolves, so let's move on.
Okay, you ready for the home run pool? Or do you have one more thing for me?
Well, yeah, let's talk about baseball for a second.
Okay. Noah Syndergaard, is he the scariest pitcher in the baseball right now?
As a Mets fan, when Cespedes dropped that ball on opening night, what went through your head?
It's opening day. I don't really get worked up by... the only time in baseball in the regular season I ever really get down is if a team blows like a 5-run lead in the ninth.
But wasn't something symbolic about the way that he dropped that ball? The way that thing he did in spring training where he wouldn't.
Do you
even
believe
pick
in karma?
The drop. Did you listen to the Klosterman Simmons podcast?
Yeah, Who cares? No, I don't believe in that stuff.
Anytime Simmons has somebody with an IQ above 110, he just looks like a fool.
Yeah,
there is a scorching hot take.
He can be outclassed sometimes, but I think that it doesn't matter. It's one game. I'm not down on Cespedes. Team's actually really good. Noah Syndergaard is unhittable. He might be the best pitcher in baseball.
You know what's even more depressing as a baseball fan?
What? And he's our fourth starter.
When your team's game on opening night takes 7 hours because of multiple rain delays, and after 7 hours, you lose on a walk-off, because that's what happened to the Twins on opening night.
I don't even think that didn't even make the internet. Nobody cares.
Yeah, I'm going to join the guy who criticizes you and says all you care about is New York, because it's very offensive.
Here's the thing. Bias. If you were like a St. Louis Cardinals fan or a Chicago Cubs fan or... you like the team that was relevant, I would Toronto Blue Jays, I would happily discuss them with you. But you like teams that are irrelevant, so we shouldn't even talk about them because no one cares.
But the Twins have made the playoffs more, in the last 15 years than any team you just mentioned.
Okay.
The Cardinals.
Okay. So, we won't
certainly
talk
more
about
than the Mets.
We won't talk about the 2010 Mets right now, but we can talk about the team that, very easily could have won the World Series last year.
Yeah. Well, but the other exciting thing about the Twins, they have some of the most exciting young prospects in baseball. And the way that Aaron Gleeman put it, and he is, almost as negative as I am when it comes to the current Twins. And as I said in the preseason,
is that the same Aaron Gleeman who did not even respond to your email asking to be on the podcast?
Correct. That is correct. Well, as I said, he's a negative guy. But the point that he's made each of the last 2 years, and it's very true, is that he said it before last season and he said it before this season. This is the worst season the Twins are going to have in a long, long time. And because when everybody on your team is 21, 22 years old, and that's the same with the Timberwolves. Every year the Twins and Timberwolves are having right now is the worst season they're going to have in a while, which gives a lot of options, right?
Yeah, of course. Do you want to do the home run pool draft?
Yeah, sure. One last thing. Did you like how the Blue Jays lost on the Chase Utley rule? Did that give you satisfaction as a Mets fan?
Nah, nothing really excites me baseball-wise on April 6th other than my team and my fantasy team.
It's hard to get you excited.
It is. Listen, I have a high standard. I'll tell you why. Yeah. I feel like I'm a veteran of the sports process.
Yeah.
I've been doing this, I was a very early adapter. I've been through the sports cycles since I was like 6 years old or 5 years old in 88 or in 89. So while I still love sports just as much now as I did when I was a 6-year-old boy and my dad bought magnets on the side of the road for $1 a magnet for every single team in all the major sports except hockey. And I just realized now I don't know where they are, but they were the coolest magnets. I would make standings on my fridge and stuff out of the magnets. you know, and I could, you could move them up and down. The problem is there was a lot of
ATV, ATV.
There was a lot of expansion. There was a lot of expansion, so like, you know, you don't have like like I remember getting like the Timberwolves magnet, and that was like, you know, like I had the Timberwolves one, but not the Hornets one. No, the Hornets came first, right? It was Hornets Heat 1 year, and then Magic Timberwolves the next year.
Yeah, they announced all four at once, but they came over.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but it takes a little more now for me to be excited about things because I've seen it all 100 times. So
you haven't seen the Chase Utley rule applied 100 times to end a game.
But I don't. Intricate baseball rules aren't really getting me excited. That's why the NBA regular season, as a, you know, a fan of a team who's never missed the playoffs, you know, basically as long as I can remember.
Yeah, because you're a homer who just picked a team from a city nowhere near where you live because they happened to be good.
They weren't even good when I picked them.
Yeah, but you heard that they were about to get one of the top 10 players in the league.
Okay, fine. But I stuck with them. I could have ditched them.
David Robinson was instantly good when he got into the NBA. You know whose rookie season was better than David Robinson's?
Okay. You know what David Robinson did his rookie year with literally human garbage as teammates? He made the playoffs, and I think they won a playoff series even. You know what? Karl Anthony Towns is not doing this year, winning 30 games. So go away. How bad? And how could he be excited about the rest of the team? If the rest of the team is so bad that having the sixth or seventh guy doesn't even help them, then they're like the new version of the Hornets. They're just,
they're a new version of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who Durant's rookie season won 20 games. The next year, when Russell Westbrook came, they won 26 games. And the next year, they won 56 games.
All right, nobody's winning 56 games with Sam Mitchell's coach. That's number one.
That's the problem, because Oklahoma City did do it with Brooks, with Scott Brooks year after year, which was
Scott
the same
Brooks
thing.
Scott Brooks was actually a good coach.
No, he
was
not.
He was a really bad coach when it came to X's and O's and the playoffs and stuff, but he was very good at developing the players. He really was.
Sam Mitchell was seen as a good coach in Toronto. He won NBA Coach of the Year, and I don't like Sam.
NBA Coach of the Year just goes to, like, you know, a team that won 12 games last year and then got a good player and won 42 this year.
But that's exactly
what
Who's the
NBA Coach of the Year this year, by the way?
But that's what the Wolves are going to do next year. They're going to win 50 games, and that's why I want them to fire Sam Mitchell, because if they don't fire him now, he's going to, the stupid ownership is going to give him part of the credit when they win 50 games next year.
Who's the NBA Coach of the Year?
And it's going to be like Scott Brooks, where they're going to have a ceiling on their potential. And that's a good question.
Because you can't give it to the Golden State guys, obviously, because they weren't there. They each coached too little of the year. You could give it to Popovich, but that's too boring.
No, agreed.
Even though probably if you're knocking out the Golden State guys, there's no reason not to give it to him. Billy Donovan, you know, he could win some big playoff series this year and could become like a legend, but he didn't do anything this year. So what about the Toronto coach?
Oh, I was going to say I would pick Steve Clifford.
Yeah.
He's the Hornets coach. The Hornets, since the All-Star break, have been the third best team in the league after San Antonio and Golden State.
Well, they have Kemba the Great. Kemba's really good. People don't realize.
But they also lost Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and at that's the point when they just
and Jefferson
like
doesn't
crazy.
Play every game. Also,
yeah, I mean they're going to be probably 50-50 in the first round. They're going to play like the Heat or the Hawks or something like that. You know, they could easily make it to the second round, and they would play Toronto, and you know, they would lose. Oh, they'd have a puncher's chance against Toronto.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, fine. All right, let's do the home run.
So my coach of the year would be was Steve Clifford of the Charlotte
Hornets.
Okay,
that's fair. Okay, were you picking 10? Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, did you know who the Charlotte Hornets coach was?
I know Steve Clifford. It may have taken me 5 seconds, but I know like he's I think he's a New York guy. People like him.
Oh, I was going to say, so fantasy, poor one out. I've had the same fantasy football league going back to high school.
Oh, is it gone?
We folded.
You folded that league? How many years did it last?
Well, in its current iteration, It lasted 13 years, but it was a continuation of our high school league, so really you could say 16 years.
And you even made it when you were abroad? Or you skipped
a year? We took 2 years off. That's why in the current iteration.
So 13 years, and you liked your keepers and everything?
Yeah, I won 4 titles in 13 years.
And then you just folded because not everyone agreed to your crazy rules like paying in March?
Yeah, well, basically what happened is that
this is the most interesting thing you've said on the podcast.
Yeah, each of the last 2 years, someone who promised that they were coming to the draft within 24 hours of the actual draft.
Flying to the draft.
Within 24 hours of the draft told us they weren't coming, which meant they had lied all along because they obviously hadn't bought a ticket. You know, and it caused massive scrambling on my part and it just as the commissioner, and it just wasn't worth it, the stress. And so I wanted to quit the league.
Why couldn't you cut from 12 to 10?
Well, so I wanted to quit the league, and then somebody said as a proposal, why don't you just make it that everybody has to lock in by April 1st, and that way everyone will commit early, and there won't, and they'll have paid, and so there's no chance for me to be back out at the last minute. And we could have done that, and we only had 8 people who wanted to commit, And we could do a league of 10, but, you know, this is a man's league. So, you know, we start two quarterbacks and three running backs and four wide receivers. And, you know,
What about post-gender stuff? You man's league? What? I don't even know what that means. You mean as opposed to boys, right? Not as opposed to women.
Yeah, an adult league as opposed to a children's league. Correct. What I meant. Good. I only said men because it happens to be that everyone in the league happens to be a man.
That's a coincidence. Most fantasy leagues are like 50-50.
Complete coincidence. It's strange. Like, we would openly welcome women, of course, and there's many women who are interested. It just
if there's
happens.
A female listener who wants to join your the next iteration of your fantasy football league, are they welcome?
So, you know, some of the members of the league think that this league is too important to me and that come the summer,
you're going to back down. But I bet some people are already going to search out new leagues. Not in April because they're not, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing.
Weebs. Yeah.
If we could get 10 seriously committed people, it would be possible to bring it back. But I don't want to be the one responsible solely have on my shoulders to find everybody, to recruit everybody, et cetera.
How devastated is Stu that this league is done?
Oh, he cried.
Did he really?
Well, I'm not with him physically, but I think that he's not crying completely just because he still holds out hope that it's going to come back.
Sure.
What about Akiva joining the league?
Nah, you're too crazy for me. First of all, if I'm in a fantasy league, I'm 99% of the time I'm in charge because I like to play with my rules. I don't like dictators like you. I mean, I don't run democratic leagues.
But hold on. But you have been in a league for many years that was a copycat of my league that was founded by people who were kicked out of my league. You were in that league.
Well, I'm still in that league. But the guy who runs it is my friend, and I can get in his head if I really
But
the rules are very locked in. There's nothing that really changes.
Yeah, but those rules are almost exactly the same as our rules because that league came from our league.
Okay.
And that league, by the way, has many female participants.
No, we have one.
Oh,
but she's won it twice.
Yeah, she has.
She even though once she left the draft to nurse her baby for a half hour and like in an auction. So you just like missed the next 30 players and she left the room to go nurse and put the baby to sleep. And she still
beat you guys.
She won the league that year. And she'll pick Tom Brady no matter the price.
Less impressive.
100. She'll go to 100 for Tom Brady out of the whole budget.
Yeah. See, that's the reason you don't want to join my league because you can't be in a league where the competition is such that people don't make idiotic decisions like that.
No. Not at all. I've only won this copy. I didn't even know it was a copycat league, but I've only won that league once.
That's a further indictment of you because that league again was made by the people who were kicked out of our league because they finished last place every year and they were lowering the.
It's hard to win a fantasy football league a bunch of times. I've won my baseball league. I think this is the 11th season, and I have 6 wins, and 4 of the last 5 I've won. That's hard.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You know why I don't do fantasy baseball, right? As we're about to embark on a fantasy baseball draft at the end of this podcast.
You're not cool enough?
No. Well, I would argue the reverse. Because
Are you done with fantasy football, do you think, if this league dies? Like, are you not going to try and start a new league?
I have so many other leagues going on. I am a consultant to my brother's league and my father-in-law's league. Uh-huh. I have your 4-1 pool.
Do you have a fantasy football consultant on your resume? And is it above or below the line that says virgin?
Hold on. Let's talk about your loser league 1 year. So one of the members of your league, Aaron Kornhauser, 1 year couldn't make the draft.
I love how you're just calling out people's names on this podcast.
Kornhauser deserves to be called out.
Call him Dr. Aaron Kornhauser?
All right. Dr. Aaron Kornhauser, MD, couldn't make the draft. Called me an hour before the draft started, asked me to draft for him. Uh-huh. I drafted for him. His team went 12-1. They dominated the regular season. He gave me no credit because he's Aaron Kornhauser.
It's the only year probably that he didn't finish dead last in the league.
Because I drafted his team that year. That's the point.
Yeah.
That's how bad your league is. Even with an absentee owner who doesn't make moves every single week, the draft was so good.
Or it's how good you are that you're such a good drafter that like even if you leave guys in on buys, they're fine.
And anyways, Kornhauser gave me no credit. You know, normally when somebody does that for your team, you tell them, if I win this year, I'm going to split the winnings with you. But obviously, Kornhauser wouldn't do that. And so I prayed very hard to the fantasy gods that Kornhauser's team should be defeated, and they were defeated in the championship. So from my perspective, it was perfect. His team had the best regular season record, made it to the championship. I get all the credit. They lose in the final week. He gets no money. So that was a great success. And also a further indictment of how bad your league is.
All right. Is there anything dorkier than bragging
about... People love to listen to other people's fantasy leagues.
And like you're bragging that your league is cooler than mine? Like I'm not sure I can really muster
Well, it's not. I don't know if it's a coolness issue as much as a competitiveness issue.
But I don't think it's cool for you to say it.
For sure it's not.
Why don't you start playing fantasy baseball then? I feel like
bragging about how big the nerds are in your fantasy leagues.
Well, I'll make you a deal. If I win my baseball league again this year, like I will have won it 5 out of 6 years and 7 out of 11 years or something like that. Why don't you join for 1 year? See if you like just 1 year only. See if you could topple the king, and then if you do, that's like, oh man, I'm too good at fantasy baseball. It's not even worth it. And if you can't, then you know you can't. I feel like I should have thought of this a few weeks ago. I would have kicked someone out and had you in the league.
as I understand it, fantasy baseball is less luck-based than fantasy football, which
much
is
less,
positive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, so the reason I never did fantasy baseball is because when
and
I was in high school...
And now you're going to have a lot of twins that are going to be exciting. And I don't like owning Mets. I feel like it's mixing business with pleasure fantasy baseball. But I have Byron Buxton, I have Miguel Sano, I'm really counting on these guys.
When I was in high school, you'd have your draft at school, you know, late March, early April. Everybody drafts a team. Then school year ends, comes the summer. 9 out of 12 kids in the league go to camp. 3 nerds are sitting at home, not at camp. The 9 people at camp don't see a computer or a newspaper for 6 weeks. They come back. Their rosters are filled with guys on the DL, and those 3 guys who didn't go to camp are 1, 2, and 3 in the standings.
So there should have been a rule that nobody's allowed to update it during camp.
So yeah, and because that happened every year, I was like, this is stupid. I'm not going to join fantasy baseball. And then it was sort of a catch-22. Because I didn't join the year before, I didn't join the next year, even when people weren't going to camp anymore.
All right, wait, nobody needs your fantasy baseball life story.
Well, you just asked why I don't do fantasy baseball.
Yeah,
I'm
but why don't you? But now just start it again. Well, anyway, let's do this.
Because I don't have
this is a great...
Yeah, what I have told people in the past when they've tried to recruit me to a league is I said, I will co-own a team because I'm very good at, you know, I have lots of charts of baseball, but I don't know how to compare the relative value of a relief pitcher to a second baseman. Because
I'm pretty
I
sure you can
it.
Figure it out. It's not like it's all like a bunch of rocket scientists here.
Yeah, but I want experience. So I would co-own a team with somebody who was also good, and then I could contribute my opinions. And maybe after a couple of years of co-ownership, I could branch out on my own.
I thought your answer would be dorky, but I didn't realize how dorky. Okay, yeah. Who gets first pick?
All right, I think I'm going to get first pick because you got first pick quite a while.
Then is it 2-3 or we're just going 1-1-1?
No, I just go back and forth.
Okay, yeah, that's going to be it. All right, you go first.
I just want Mike Giancarlo Stanton, so that's what I'm going
to
go first.
Okay, Giancarlo Stanton, I think it's disrespectful probably to call him Mike if he wanted to be called Mike. I'll pick Chris Davis, and we get their home runs that they've had already, right?
Oh, wait, we do?
Yeah. It's annoying to like not count the first 2 days. Stanton has a home run already.
Yeah, but doesn't somebody have like 4?
Yeah, like Steven Souza or something.
All right, so he's...
No, Robbie Cano has 4, I think.
Yeah, Robbie Cano has 4. He had 2
last
night.
So pick him
first.
I'll pick Chris Davis second.
Okay. All right, I will go with Mike Trout.
Okay, Mike Trout. I'm going to hit Miguel Sano.
Wow. That is early.
No, it's not.
I like Miguel Sano.
I haven't projected in the top 5.
I mean, as a Twins fan, I like it, but I'm very surprised to hear that. Okay, so...
Probably got the highest upside of any of these guys, except for maybe Davis.
Yeah. All right, I'll take Bryce Harper.
Mm-hmm. I'll go with Edwin Encarnacion.
He's injured right now, isn't he?
Nope. Josh Donaldson's injured, but I guess all white guys look the same to you.
I thought on our Blue Jays, they said that Edwin Encarnacion wasn't going to DH the first few days because he was injured. Oh, I don't know. All right, I will take...
Yeah, he had an oblique injury, but he's fine already.
Oh, okay. I will take another Blue Jay, Jose Bautista.
Nolan Arenado from the Rockies.
Okay, let's say another Jose Abreu.
Paul Goldschmidt.
Not a Jew.
Okay. Are you going to say the religion of every guy going forward here?
No, I'm going to say what religion they're not.
Okay, fine, good.
All right, so I will take someone who is not a member of the Baha'i faith, and I refer, of course, to Chris Bryant.
Oh, I was about to pick Chris Bryant. I'll pick
Wait,
no.
Didn't you know I was going with Chris Bryant as soon as I said the player was not a member of the Baha'i faith?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Remember Khalil Green on the Padres? He was a Baha'i.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Fun fact.
And he was a member of the Reggie Nelson All-Stars.
Yes. Reggie Cleveland All-Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody knows what we're talking about. I'll pick Todd Frazier, who is not a Scientologist. Is that even a religion? I'm not even sure.
I will say that I believe Josh Donaldson is not a Shia Muslim.
Okay. He's the other one?
Sunni.
Sunni. Nelson Cruz.
Okay.
Father, not a rabbi. You think Nelson Cruz's dad is Ted? That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, that would be interesting. All right, I will take someone who I don't believe. Well, I'm really not sure, but I don't believe that Miguel Cabrera practices Shintoism. But I could be wrong.
Okay. I'm going to go with noted non-Mormon Anthony Rizzo.
By the way, if we find out after the fact that we were wrong in any of these religions, we lose the player. Agreed?
No, that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. Is there any chance? See, that's why you got to be careful. Okay. Hold on. I'm Googling religious faiths.
Is Evan Gaddis a Baptist?
No, I just need more obscure religions to reference.
Okay.
All right. All right. Carlos Correa is a young stud. I don't believe he's Wiccan, so I will take Carlos Correa.
He's not a Wiccan. Yeah. Okay, Correa is a good pick. All right, J.D. Martinez does not practice Kabbalah, but he does hit home runs.
Hopefully not too many of them this year. All right, and I will take from the Colorado Rockies a noted non-member of Celtic polytheistic faith, Carlos Gonzalez. That's my 10th player. Are we only doing 10?
Yeah, so I get one more?
Sure.
Are you tracking who I've drafted?
Yeah.
You know, I want to draft Poppy, but he could be any religion, and I wouldn't be surprised. He already has 2 home runs.
Mark Trumbo's already had a couple home runs.
Yeah, Trumbo's good. I'm going to say...
George Springer's on the board. He hits lots of home runs. Albert Pujols, didn't he have 40 last year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to pick Pujols, but I just have to think of a funny religion.
Evan Gaddis was my number one pick in our home run pool last year, by the way.
Well, Gaddis is good. He's just on the DL. So
Because he was catcher eligible. So last year, by the way, people should know, we had a fantasy baseball league where the only stat that counted was home runs. And one guy in our league drafted only Baltimore Orioles, all 12 of his picks, or 15 of his picks, which was kind of impressive. And one former Oriole.
Did he win?
We actually mentioned this on the podcast last week. All right. So your last pick is Albert Pujols.
He's not a Zoroastrian.
Oh, he's not. Okay. No. Are you sure?
If he is, I lose him.
Oh, that's true. It's a risk. All right.
It says so that 600,000 people practice Rastafarianism, but I don't know.
But it's not legal in Major League Baseball. So
that's true.
Or at least not, you can't practice. It's much like Judaism. You can be a Rastafarian, you just can't smoke weed.
That's true.
So, you know, you can be Jewish in Major League Baseball, you just can't take off every Shabbos. So the league is sort
that
of
that was the worst summer. Analogy maybe in the history of analogies. Oh my God.
All right. Just a quick rundown of our home run pool. I get the combined home runs hit this year by Giancarlo Stanton, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Jose Bautista, Jose Abreu, Chris Bryant, Josh Donaldson, Miguel Cabrera, Carlos Correa, Carlos Gonzalez. Those 10 are all members of various faiths, but I don't believe a single one of them is a member of the Italo-Roman neo-paganist tradition. Your 10 players, Chris Davis, Miguel Sano, Edwin Encarnacio, Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, Todd Frazier, Nelson Cruz, Anthony Rizzo, JD Martinez, Albert Pujols. Akiva, what do those 10 players all have in common?
You're going to hit a lot more home runs than your team.
Oh, and none of them are Taoists, which is surprising because it's like the world's third biggest religion.
Jeez. All right. I feel bad because we've been on a roll with this podcast, and now we've grinded to a halt. The point where not only is nobody listening, but no one's like, even the people who shut it off aren't going to be like, "Ooh, let me see what they have next week." They're like, "Delete from iTunes." Yeah. But next week, I think it'll be
best.
Next
thing
will
ever.
Be good. The top 100 TV shows, the draft. I have some fun ideas for us to do the draft. Sort of drafting the draft or a draft pool.
The NFL draft.
Yeah, well, we don't do NHL draft on this podcast. We don't even talk. Oh, do we have a no NHL policy on this podcast? I don't think we've ever talked hockey.
It depends if the Wild can beat the Blackhawks.
Oh, you're going to pretend to be a Wild fan even though they existed after you moved out? Okay. That's cool. How does that work? If you're from Minnesota and then you're not from Minnesota anymore.
Well, you've never been to San Antonio.
Yeah, but I've like consistently not been there.
Yeah, but I'm a Lynx fan. The Lynx also came after I moved. Well, here's the thing about the Wild. So first of all, my legal domicile was Minnesota when they joined the league. But look, first and foremost, I was a North Stars fan. They were taken away. I'm a Minnesota Gophers hockey fan, and I continue to be. The Wild are third on my hockey totem pole, but the Gophers did not even make the Frozen Four this year. So
whatever.